Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm Tom Lyons. In today's show, we talk to Chuck Haas from HUGO's Yellow Ribbon Network about HUGO becoming a Yellow Ribbon Spotlight. And we look at Minnesota's involvement in World War II with Doug Becky of the Minnesota Military Museum. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Nationwide, there are 1.9 million children with a parent serving in the military. 220,000 of these children have a parent currently deployed. Adding to this, research suggests that children of deployed parents experience more stress than their peers. We know from experience that military families and military children in particular are a resilient group, but significant parental absence over the course of training and deployments can have an accumulative effort of eroding their resilience. We also know that many military children feel like their classmates and teachers do not understand what they're going through. The challenge, both to the Minnesota National Guard leadership and to parents, is to try and bridge that gap of understanding and support policies and programs that address educational side effects of military membership and training or deployment absences. This year, the President is enacting several directives that will work towards the goal of improving education for military children. First, the Department of Education will begin tracking data on military children in order to enhance the future direction of education and counseling resources. In addition, the Department of Education grants will favor applications to meet the needs of military-connected students. The Department of Education and the Department of Defense will also work with school districts to provide guidance based on best practices for approving block leave after deployments. Also, the Department of Agriculture's 4-H National Headquarters will enhance their partnership with active, National Guard, and Reserve military service branches to support 4-H clubs and activities for military children and youth. The Minnesota National Guard also fields and supports programs and initiatives with the goal of supporting the educational needs of military families and students. These include post-deployment parenting skills training, age-based veterans toolkits for parenting. In addition, we also offer pre-deployment family prep academies, family reintegration academies, as well as youth development and child care benefits and programs. All these programs can be reviewed at the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon website at beyondtheyellowribbon.org. Other resources for Minnesota military families include Military OneSource, available online, or 1-888-LINK-VET.
Thank you, General Nash. You can link to the Adjutant General's blog, Facebook, and Twitter feed through minnesotanationalguard.org/generallyspeaking. This week, Chuck Haas joins us. He is the chair from HUGO's Yellow Ribbon Network. Chuck, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you, Tom.
Now, some of our listeners might not be familiar with HUGO being in the Yellow Ribbon spotlight. Can you tell us about it?
HUGO is in Washington County, in northwestern Washington County, just south of Forest Lake, just north of White Bear Lake, right off of Interstate 35E.
And HUGO, are there some major employers up there? Can you tell us a little bit about the city?
Schweders is one of our employers, Wilson Tool. Both of them are strong supporters of our Yellow Ribbon Network. Both have had employees in the Guard.
So you are the chair of HUGO's Yellow Ribbon Network, and you're also the president of the Yellow Ribbon Network of Washington County.
That was true up until last night.
Uh-oh, you're all done.
I'm all done. We had my annual term was up, and we had elections, our board of directors, so retired Chief Steve Campos from Cottage Grove is the new president of the Yellow Ribbon Network of Washington County.
And in Washington County, there are a number of Yellow Ribbon cities, and it's a tightly knit county, and you work together pretty well, don't you?
Yes, we do. We do have a lot of activities that we sponsor together and try and support the troops as united communities.
Now, is it hard to get people energized and out working for the Yellow Ribbon community?
No, it really isn't. There is a whole host of folks out there that would like to support our troops and their families.
What did you have to do to get started to be a Yellow Ribbon community in HUGO?
Well, in HUGO, we had to have what's called an initial training event, where we had to use the newspapers and mailings and emails to tell the different community members about the initial training event that the National Guard was to put on. And we had over 100 people sign up to be there that night and be part of our Yellow Ribbon Network.
And how long have you been working together now? I think you were proclaimed a Yellow Ribbon community in January of 2010.
Yes, we were. And if folks would like to see what's going on in Hugo, they can look at the City of Hugo's website. The easiest way is just Google City of Hugo, and it'll come right up. And the Yellow Ribbon emblem is right on the front page of our city's website, and you can see all the activities we are doing and all the activities we have done.
We're speaking with Chuck Haas, the chair of Hugo's Yellow Ribbon Network, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour here on News Talk 100.3 FM. Chuck, can you give us some examples of some of the things that the Yellow Ribbon community of Hugo does to help support the troops?
Well, in the past, a couple of Welcome Home the events. A year ago at this time, the 1,000 members of the National Guard that were in Basra, Iraq, returned home. And one of the things we had was a Welcome Home the Troops pheasant hunt. Matter of fact, General Nash, the now Adjutant General, was commanding that unit and attended with his troops.
And I understand you were planning on about 50, and it got a little larger.
Yeah, we had to double our size in a hurry, because once the troops found out about it, they were really emailing in their invitations. I even had an email from one female soldier who said, "I'm not a hunter, but my husband is home while I've been on deployment taking care of our two teenage daughters. Can he come?"
And he wasn't able to hunt while she was deployed.
No, he wasn't. And so she came around and walked around with him, and he was able to participate in the hunt. It was a great day.
Now, you told me that was actually an all-day event.
It was an all-day event. They came and they shot sporting clays in the morning. General Nash was there with his trusty Model 12 Winchester. And then they had a nice wild game lunch, and then in the afternoon they all went pheasant hunting.
And are we planning a repeat of that?
Yes, we are. In 2012, when this group that is going to be deployed this year returns, we'll have another Welcome Home the Troop pheasant hunt.
That's terrific. Now, I understand you're doing something special for Blue Star Mothers. Can you tell us what that being a Blue Star mother means and what you're doing?
Blue Star Mom is a mother of a soldier who's deployed. As I'm told, nobody gets it like a military mom. And so here in Hugo, we don't have a lot of military families with the husbands or the wives deployed, but we have a lot of families whose children are deployed, so hence the Blue Star Mothers, Blue Star Fathers. And we have a group of about 19 Blue Star Mothers right now, and they gather regularly to support one another and to support our troops and their other families.
So you try to treat them carefully and gently and help them through that deployment.
Yes, we do, and we meet, the City of Hugo Network meets at the Hugo American Legion the fourth Wednesday of every month. It's also hamburger night. We serve hamburgers to anybody that would like to come, and the proceeds from the hamburger sales go to support our troops and their families.
Now, I understand you occasionally have some joint meetings with other Yellow Ribbon communities in Washington County.
Yes, we do, Tom. You were at one of our recent joint meetings with Stillwater and Lake Elmo, and we have meetings like that. We've had joint events. Stillwater and Lake Elmo and Hugo and Woodbury got together last summer to have a Welcome Home to Troops ball game. 100 soldiers, mainly Air Guard men and women, went to the Twins game last August.
And you get together to share some ideas and to help each other support the troops.
Yes, we do.
We're speaking with Chuck Haas from the Yellow Ribbon community of Hugo, and we'll continue our conversation with him after a short break. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Today we're talking with Chuck Haas, the chair of Hugo's Yellow Ribbon Network. Chuck, a while ago we were talking about the pheasant hunt that you put on for the 34th Infantry. You had something else you wanted to tell me.
Yeah, that pheasant hunt still has ripples of effect for National Guard and military members. At that March event, last March 2010, a warrant officer met somebody from the Timberwolves, and the fellow from the Timberwolves found out that this was a young, engaged warrant officer, and eventually the Timberwolves Foundation wanted to provide a wedding package for a engaged service member. So right here, before Thanksgiving, this soldier and his fiancée were called down to a Timberwolves game and presented a $53,000 wedding package.
So they won a wedding package?
Yeah. Can you imagine the father of the bride going,
Ooh. Escaped that one, didn't he? That's terrific. Now, we were talking also earlier off the air about Washington County, which has many yellow ribbon communities and working together closely. And I asked you about the number of veterans over in Washington County. How many veterans do you have over there?
We have about 17,000 veterans residing in Washington County.
And it sounds like there's a good contingent of the 34th Infantry living in Washington County.
Yes, there are. And as I mentioned, a lot of community support for the Yellow Ribbon Network. Our Hugo Lions, for example, as you look at the population of the Lions, so many of those are veterans of past wars. And, you know, Vietnam War, and they are still serving their community today as they did years ago.
And trying to make a difference.
That's
what it's all about. Now, how do you find volunteers? How do you tell people what you're doing in Hugo and in Washington County so that they can step up and help?
Well, the media plays a great help. We have two local papers that help, we publicize our meetings. They're told about them as we share the ideas with other communities. All the email lists go back and forth if we're having an event or if we have a need. We had a need for one soldier that needed some furniture. He was moving into a new house, and we put the need for, you know, sofa, table, and chairs. Took 6 minutes.
6 minutes, and you filled up a house. Wow.
Took me more time to call all the people that said I got stuff to tell them we've already got the stuff than it is to get the stuff.
That's fantastic.
It is. It's really tremendous, the outpouring of support that's available in our communities.
Now, we've talked in the past about Yellow Ribbon programs doing some of the simple things, plowing or shoveling snow,
yes,
mowing the lawn. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of those little things that really help people, isn't it?
Yeah, can you come over? I got to go to school for parent-teacher conferences, something like that.
So
we had our local theaters donate 100 free tickets. We called our family assistance center, and I think it took about 15 minutes, and all 100 tickets were gone to soldiers and their families.
Wow. So you must be using the social networks to help get those words out.
Yes.
And do you work closely with the County Veteran Service Officer?
Yes, we do. Yeah, Robbie is a member of our board and the Washington County Yellow Ribbon Network.
I hear he does a pretty good job.
He does,
there.
Yeah.
That's terrific. Well, I think you had some other programs you wanted to talk about.
Right now, for anyone that doesn't know what to do with those Girl Scout cookies, we are collecting them and sending them to the troops.
And if somebody has too many of them that they shouldn't eat, what do they do with them?
Well, they can drop them off at the Hugo City Hall. And if anybody wants to make a donation, they can make it to the Yellow Ribbon Network of Washington County, P.O. Box 14, Hugo, Minnesota, to help pay for the postage to get the cookies overseas.
And you helped with the Sweet Martha's cookies.
Yeah, the Washington County Yellow Ribbon Network got some addresses and got some donations to help Sweet Martha get those delicious chocolate chip cookies over there.
Help pay the postage.
Help pay the postage.
I'm sure there were 10,000 moments of enjoyment for the troops.
Oh, yes, there were.
We're speaking with Chuck Haas, the chair of Hugo's Yellow Ribbon Network, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour here on News Talk 100.3 FM. Now, I know you work together and you have some joint meetings and you trade some ideas over in Washington County. If someone wants to help, if they want to participate, once again, how do they get a hold of you?
They can, in Hugo, they can contact me at City Hall, at P.O. Box 14, Hugo, or they can see the City of Hugo's website. They can look Google the City of Hugo and go on our website, and they can find all the contact information. They can find out how to sign up to help. And if anybody's in any other community, just contact the Yellow Ribbon Network in their community. The National Guard has their Beyond the Yellow Ribbon website that lists all the different cities. You can find your city through their website if you need to.
Well, here's the important question of the day. These troops, these heroes, are proud, and they're deployed, and their families don't want to ask for help. How do they earn your trust?
That is our job and our major mission, is when we have an opportunity to serve, we want to serve well, because the word-of-mouth credibility is going to spread from family to family. And then people will call and say, you know, I could use the driveway shoveled after that last big snow. I know we have a number of former deployed members of the military on our network, and that's what they tell us. The military members are not going to ask for help. You're going to have to make yourself available and win their trust.
So for the families of those that are deployed in Washington County, they can go to the Family Readiness Officer. They can go to the County Veteran Service Office. They can call upon the Yellow Ribbon communities. They can call upon the Family Assistance Centers. And then if there's some kind of financial need, they can call on the Minnesota Military Family Foundation, which is why I was over in Lake Elmo talking to a joint crew over there.
Yeah.
And I think some of your Yellow Ribbon communities are going to help with the fundraiser we've got coming.
Yeah, we talked about it last night at our board meeting that we would try and contact you and see what we could help with that tournament, finding whole sponsors and maybe staffing or working it. We'd be delighted to be a part of that.
That'll be our second annual Minnesota Military Family Foundation Golf Classic, which will be held at the 3M course at Tartan Park on Tuesday, August 9th this year. And if any of the businesses out there in Hugo and Washington County and anywhere in the state want to help us support that, we're there to help those families when they're in times of financial need. And what a program that's come together. We didn't have any of this back in my era, in the Vietnam era. Feels good, doesn't it?
It does. It certainly does. And the important other element here is it gives people of our community an opportunity to serve and be a part of this great cause, because there are so many people out there that really want to help. And I think for National Guard members that are being deployed, look at your fellow community members that want to help. You're giving them an opportunity to be a part of the mission.
And once again, before we run out of time, the Yellow Ribbon community of Hugo, you have your meetings how often?
The fourth Wednesday of every month at the Hugo American Legion. It's also hamburger night. We'll serve you hamburgers.
There you go. I can just see you doing that. So anybody that wants to get involved is welcome to show up. And
absolutely.
All right.
We'd welcome them all.
Chuck, it looks like you're doing a fantastic job over in Hugo with your Yellow Ribbon community, and thank you for serving all of Washington County.
Well, thank you, Tom. Appreciate it very much.
That was Chuck Haas. Thanks for joining us today. Chuck was the chair of Hugo's Yellow Ribbon program. We have links to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Each week, we feature Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, a comprehensive program that connects service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase, a story where someone just like you and I went out of their way to make a difference in the life of a service member or military family. Specialist Nathan Wallace could have used a hand, but as a wounded veteran having just returned from Iraq, Nathan was too proud to ask for help. Months before Nathan returned home to his home in Woodbury, volunteers in the area established a Yellow Ribbon network. And by the time he did return, local volunteers had identified many military families in the area and created several fast action support teams. These teams were helping service members and their families take care of the things that needed to be done quickly, whether it be shoveling the driveway or helping with house repairs. The Woodbury Yellow Ribbon Network was making a difference through random acts of kindness. There was one exception, though, and that was Nathan, who they didn't know about. He was living alone and could have benefited from the services the network offered. Finally, after a chance encounter with other Yellow Ribbon volunteers, the Woodbury Network heard about Nathan and reached out. He was grateful for the assistance and is now involved in the community's efforts to help other local service members. Thank you, Woodbury, for showcasing how Minnesotans can strive to go beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon connects service members and their families with organizations, agencies, companies, community support, training, services, and resources to bring our service members all the way home. To learn how you can, like Woodbury, make the difference in the life of a service member or military family, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. When we return, we'll take a look at Minnesota's involvement in World War II with Doug Beckey. That's right here on News Talk 100.3. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelledo.
Today, I want to focus on the people who make the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs successful. Here are a few examples. The U.S. Department of Veterans Administration recently sent out their annual survey team the Hastings Veterans Home, and I'm proud to report that we received a perfect score. This is rare and a significant accomplishment. The team at Hastings has worked incredibly hard, and I am pleased to see their dedication and focus on quality care rewarded. Our team on the state approving agency also experienced recent success by achieving the highest rating assessment by the VA for 2010. The Minnesota Veterans Homes received a best-in-class rating in several categories through Pinnacle Consulting in 2010. In addition to our talented and highly trained staff in all divisions of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minnesota Veterans Home, in particular, have a dedicated group of individuals who willingly give their time to enhance the quality of life for our residents. I'm talking about our volunteers, who range from children, community members, family members, to organized veterans groups. Last year, veterans provided 68,000 hours of time among our five state veterans homes. Volunteers do a variety of things for the Minnesota veterans homes, from helping with recreational events, outings, medical appointments, shopping, office work, sewing, entertainment, and much, much more. Volunteers change lives with the time they invest, and they put others first in everything they do. I also want to thank sponsors who made generous donations. Last year, the homes received more than $800,000 in total donations. For those of you who have volunteered your time or shown financial support, thank you for being a part of our team. Together, we do improve the lives of Minnesota's heroes. To volunteer or learn how you can help, visit us on the web at minnesotaveteran.org and contact the state's veterans home in your area.
Thank you, Commissioner Larry Shelledo. You can find out more about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs programs by calling 1-888-LINK-VET or online at minnesotaveteran.org. This week, Doug Becky joins us. He is a Vietnam veteran and served in the Army Reserves from 72 to 89, retired as a major, and he is the curator of the Minnesota Military Museum at Camp Ripley. Mr. Becky, welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You are the curator of the Minnesota Military Museum at Camp Ripley. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. It's a great museum. It was founded in 1977 at Camp Ripley. It's gone through several different buildings. It's the state's military history museum. It deals with all branches of the service and all eras of the state's history. So it's not just the National Guard Museum, although we do have a heavy emphasis on that, and we get great support from the National Guard at Camp Ripley.
And that's open to the public in the summertime?
It's open to the public all year round, from the 1st of May to the 1st of October. It's open 7 days a week from 10 to 5. And then over the winter months, it's open on Thursdays and Fridays from 9 to 4.
And all of our listeners are welcome to stop by and take a look at all the information you have there.
Absolutely. We hope they all come.
Mr. Becky, last week we were talking about World War I, and this week we're going to talk about Minnesota's involvement in World War II. Can you tell us about that?
Well, actually, I'd like to start with the things that were going on leading up to World War II. And there was some difficulty reestablishing the National Guard in Minnesota. After World War I, there were provisions in the federal laws to federalize units and take them off to war, but there weren't the provisions to bring them back. Additionally, the units that left weren't the same units that would have been coming back because they went through a lot of personnel changes. So many of the Minnesotans that marched off to war in Minnesota units had been transferred to other units or been separated separately. And so the units didn't really exist as they were in 1917. So new laws had to be instituted. Then during the war, other units were created in Minnesota to fill the gap of the units that were activated, the 4th, 5th, and 6th Regiments of the Home Guard. So they were formed into regular National Guard units. And then by 1920, other units were being reformed in Minnesota. The 4th Regiment of the the Home Guard was formed into the 151st Field Artillery. Then later on, the 135th Infantry came back, and also an ambulance company came back. So by about 1920, the 34th Division had been reestablished in Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska, and the Dakotas. And then also it was desired to start an air element in Minnesota. That had been something that was pioneered in World War I. And the father of the Minnesota National Guard was a guy named Lieutenant Ray Miller. He ended up a general. But at this time, he was a lieutenant, and he wanted to start a unit in Minnesota, so he could talk to the adjutant general and got funding to rent a Curtiss aircraft, which he flew 1,600 miles to Washington, D.C., to petition the federal government, got permission, and they formed the 109th Observation Squadron, which was part of the 34th Division. Its first location was at Curtiss Airfield, north of what's now the fairgrounds. They later moved to the racetrack in Bloomington, which eventually became the Twin Cities International Airport. And then their last location where they stayed was Holman Field at the downtown St. Paul Airport. By 1925, there were 5,500 men in the Minnesota National Guard.
We're speaking with Doug Becky, the curator for the Minnesota Military Museum at Camp Ripley, on the Minnesota Military Radio Hour here on News Talk 100.3 FM. Mr. Becky, where did the Guard train in the years between the wars?
In the years 1921 to 34, the Guard built 27 new armories around the state. And, of course, many of them are still there in the smaller towns all over. And we've got the old armory in downtown Minneapolis that's still there, too. It's not an armory anymore. I think they're still trying to figure out what to do with it. Most of the training in the units was conducted by the NCOs. There was no basic training like they have today where troops are sent off to a fort somewhere in the country. The NCOs took care of all the training. It was all done on their nightly drills. Usually the drills were on Monday night. Plus they had 2 weeks of annual training. Sometimes it was out of the state, sometimes that was at Fort Snelling, but usually early on it was at Camp Lakeview in Lake City, Minnesota. This had been used since the late 1800s, but it was only 300 acres. In 1931, the state authorized $300,000 to buy 12,000 acres north of Little Falls, which became Camp Ripley. And it's very near the site of the original Fort Ripley that was founded in the 1840s. They built brick mess halls, administrative buildings, supply buildings, maintenance facilities. But the troops lived in tents, and so they'd go there and set up their tents, and that was the situation into the 1950s, actually. It provided for much better training. They had a lot of firing ranges where they could utilize all their weapons and, of course, an increased amount of maneuver area.
Mr. Becky, in those years, who joined the Guard and what was their motivation to do so?
Yeah, people joined for all kinds of reasons. Some just liked military life. I've talked to many veterans who joined because they had friends and families who were in. Some followed their father into the service. The father was the first sergeant who recruited the sons, or they had a brother, an older brother who was in. Some went for a sense of adventure. In those days, there was no vacations, really. People had a very simple lifestyle compared to what we have today. So the chance to go off to Camp Ripley and have an adventure there, shooting guns, driving trucks and everything, was a big deal to a lot of these guys. Some joined for training to get a job skill. Some joined for social status. I talked to one guy who joined the Brainerd unit because he was 17 years old, and the Brainerd unit sponsored the big social event, the ball, every year, and he wanted to go to that. But he was able to get into the Guard and a few days before the ball and found out that as a 17-year-old it wasn't such a great deal, but he was enlisted for 6 years, so he was set. A lot of them joined for money. They got 25 cents an hour. That was $13 a pay period, and that was a lot of money in those days. It was real money. It was something they could really use, and their families needed the money, too.
Do you know how many days of training they put in per year as a member of the Guard between the wars?
Well, it would be a Monday night each week, or one night of the week each week. Usually it was Mondays, and then they did the 14 or 15 days of annual training every summer.
And some bad years economically between the wars, and as you said, that was a way to earn a little extra money, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was significant money for those guys in those days. 25 cents doesn't sound like much nowadays, but they could really do something with it. A guy could take his girlfriend out for a hamburger, a Coke, and a movie for 50 cents, and so to get 25 cents an hour was a big deal for a lot of them.
I'll bet it was. We'll continue our conversation with Doug Becky after a short break. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Today we're talking with Doug Becky, the curator of the Minnesota Military Museum, and we've been talking about Minnesota's involvement in World War II. Actually, Mr. Becky, we've been talking about in between World War I and World War II. Can you tell me, was the Guard involved in the 1934 trucker strike in Minneapolis?
Yeah, the Guard was heavily involved in it. You know, I think a lot of us who were children of the 60s think that was the first period of civil unrest, but there was a major strike in 1934. It started in May. Minneapolis truckers struck over wages, and Governor Floyd B. Olson called out 2,500 National Guardsmen. That was negotiated. The settlement was negotiated in that case, but then in July and August, the truckers went on strike again, and there was significant violence. There were two people killed and 67 injured. The truckers ended up blockading all commercial trucks coming into the city. They'd let farmers bringing their own produce into the city, but they wouldn't let any commercial trucks in. Governor Olson declared martial law, and 3,500 National Guard were called to restore order. And the strike ended on the 21st of August in 1934.
Sir, did the training evolve or change as we got closer to World War II?
It changed significantly. In the 1930s, President Roosevelt and military leadership sought to increase troop strength and improve equipment. The U.S. had one of the world's smallest armies. We demobilized immediately after World War I. Even Holland and Romania had bigger armies than we did. In the mid-30s, the field artillery got trucks, and that replaced their horse-drawn artillery. The 34th Tank Company was formed in Brainerd. The 92nd Infantry Brigade of the 205th and 206th Infantry Regiments, that was outside the 34th Division, they were converted into the 101st Anti-Aircraft Coastal Artillery Brigade. And so they got new equipment, a new mission to defend the nation's coasts. And then major maneuvers started later in the 30s. There war clouds were on the horizon in the late 30s, both in Europe and in Asia. In 1937, there were major maneuvers at Camp Ripley and the surrounding area involving over 11,000 troops from the 34th Division and the 7th Division. In 38 and 39, there were more maneuvers. They were smaller, but they tested mobile warfare. And there was also an additional weekly drill ordered for the National Guard. In January of 1939, the National Guard conducted its first winter maneuvers at Camp Ripley. And then in 1939, war started in Europe. Germany invaded Poland, and Britain and France declared war on Germany, and World War II was on. In the summer of 1940, there were major maneuvers at Camp Ripley. 50,000 troops from eight states assembled at Ripley. Chief of Staff George Marshall inspected, and he noted that there were serious deficiencies in the training and in the equipment, not just in the Minnesota maneuvers, but at other maneuvers held all over the country that summer. And from this, they had the ammunition to go back to Congress and say, we need to get ready. There's war on the horizon. On the 27th of August, 1940, Congress authorized the calling up of 300,000 National Guardsmen for up to a year of training. And then in September of 1940, Congress passed by one vote the Selective Service Act, authorizing up to 900,000 men to be drafted into the Army for a year. Now, when men saw the draft there, and they knew they were probably going to get called, that was a strong encouragement to join the National Guard because it kept them close to the hometown units, kept them close to friends, and it gave them some choice as to where and what they'd be doing. It also offered them the opportunity that many of them didn't have for a year of full employment. So there was those reasons to join. Some of them saw war on the horizon. Some of them just saw a chance to get away and to earn a living for a year. On the 10th of February, 1941, the 34th Division, minus its aviation element and its tank unit, were federalized and sent to Camp Claiborne, Louisiana. Some of them trucked down there and some of them went down on trains. The 109th Observation Squadron was also federalized, but it went to Camp Beauregard, Louisiana. A little bit later, the 34th Tank Company from Brainerd was federalized. It was sent to Fort Lewis, Washington. They got training in new tanks, and then they were sent to Clark Field in the Philippines a little bit later. The 101st Anti-Aircraft Artillery Brigade was sent to Camp Hahn, California. And in April of 1941, draftees started arriving in the unit, again filling it out. The first waves of draftees coming into the units were Midwestern men. A lot of them were from Minnesota. But the Army again saw the need to spread the population around to avoid the concentration of casualties in any given unit. So the next wave of draftees that came in the summer of 1941 were from all over the country, and the Minnesota character of the unit started to dissipate a little bit. At Camp Claiborne and at the other locations, the units participated in maneuvers and training, but by December of 1941, they were anticipating Christmas leave at home and a February return to home and back to civilian life. But in December of 1941, on the 7th, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, and everything in their lives changed. They were no longer in for a year. Now they were in for the duration of the war plus 6 months, and their lives had changed significantly. We were in the war.
Mr. Becky, when we come back next week, we'll pick up World War II from December 7th, 1941. But my last question, with that alert, were they able to upgrade their training and their equipment in 1940?
Well, the equipment had to be made, and we had to gear up the whole war industry for that. And, of course, the United States had a war industry or an industrial base like no other country in the world. And we were able to fairly quickly shift our industry over to a war footing and produce equipment on a scale that no other nation has ever seen. But initially, the units were short of equipment. They were training with mock guns, using telephone poles as barrels for guns, and using a lot of World War I era equipment. But the new equipment was coming online fairly quickly. But by Pearl Harbor, most of it really hadn't come into the units yet. But it was in the pipeline.
Thank you, Mr. Becky. I look forward to some more discussion next week.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That was Doug Becky, the curator of the Minnesota Military Museum at Camp Ripley. We have links to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Let's take a look in the mailbag to see the listener question of the week. If you have a question, submit it to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Joining me in the studio is Sergeant First Class Melanie Nelson from Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Network. Sergeant Nelson, what's in the mailbag today?
Hi, Tom. Well, we have a really nice letter in the mailbag today. It's from a woman in Southern California. She writes, I recently visited a niece in Minnesota and was incredibly impressed by what Beyond the Yellow Ribbon offers military personnel and their families. I am a co-founder of a group in Southern California, and we are raising money to build a permanent veterans monument in our community. We are also involved in placing banners in our community in honor of current military personnel. I am wondering if you know of a group similar to yours that supports military families in Southern California that I could network with. All of you in Minnesota are to be commended. Your programs are proof that there are people who truly care for those deployed and those who remain at home.
She asked a very good question, and of course we know that the Yellow Ribbon program started in Minnesota.
It did. It did, Tom. And I don't know, and my leaders don't know, if it would have been possible to start our Yellow Ribbon Network without the vision of our former Adjutant General Larry Shalito, and without our architect, Chaplain John Morris, Lieutenant Colonel in the Minnesota National Guard, and without our governor, our former governor, Tim Pawlenty. And as we look at our new leadership that we have in place, Governor Dayton and our new Adjutant General Richard Nash, we really expect this effort to continue. Frankly, Tom, I don't know that it can stop, because it is at a grassroots level now, going community to community. This military support is just embedded in our state.
Chuck Haas from Hugo was in here earlier, and you can just see the enthusiasm.
Yes. Oh, Hugo is a wonderful town with what they're doing. But I do have an answer for this woman from Southern California. There is a website she can go to. It was started in 2009. It's called the National Guard Joint Service Support website. The website is jointservicesupport.org. And there is her opportunity to connect with her state. Oftentimes you connect through the family programs or perhaps their Yellow Ribbon Network or Yellow Ribbon Training. No state is doing what we're doing here in our state in Minnesota with this grassroots community campaign.
We're way out in front, but I understand the National Guard has adopted the Yellow Ribbon program and is spreading it around the country. Is that right?
Tom, yes. I actually just got back from a national conference, and other states are starting to see what we're doing and bringing it to that local level like we have done. As a matter of fact, I just got a call this week from a woman in Illinois, a church. She wanted to know how her church could get involved in our effort. And the response that I got back from our state chaplain, when I asked him what to tell her, he said, tell her to go be a pioneer.
And show them how to do it.
Exactly.
And I'm sure he'd be happy to talk to the state chaplain down there and explain
it
to him.
Oh, yeah.
Knowing him. All right, Sergeant Nelson, we're about out of time. Thank you for joining us today. And for our listeners, if you have a question, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com and let us know what's on your mind. We're about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Chuck Haas from the Hugo's Yellow Ribbon Network, Doug Becky from the Minnesota Military Museum, Sergeant Nelson for the mailbag, Commissioner Larry Shalito of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, the Adjutant General, Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about Black History Month and Tuskegee Airmen. Should be a great show. That's next Sunday morning at 7, right here on News Talk 100.3 FM. If you have questions for our mailbag, or if you want to check out podcasts of today's show and all our shows, visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of KTLK, Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.